Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, Canada. Here's Mordecai Breenberg.
This past week, a report by Ravi Nessman of Associated Press detailed the desperate situation of people in a rural town in Afghanistan. He wrote, "Babies whose mother's milk has dried up are fed grass porridge. The toothless elderly crush grass into almost a powder. Many have died. Nearly everyone has diarrhea or a hacking cough." The news was a small glimpse into a much more alarming situation, and to get a sense of the situation across the country and the effect of the U.S.-led bombing campaign on the already difficult humanitarian situation, we've contacted James Jennings of Conscience International. James is going to leave this week for his organization's third mission to Afghanistan since May, bringing food, blankets, and health supplies. And we've reached him in Atlanta, Georgia. Good morning and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio, Jim.
Thank you. Good morning.
I read a quote from the Associated Press reporter, and I'm wondering how this appalling report of people eating grass in the city or village of Bonavash reflects what you know about the wider situation in Afghanistan.
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind the broader situation, because in the last 20 years, half the refugees in all the world have been Afghans. And what I saw there was vast refugee camps with tents crammed together as far as the eye can see in every direction. And then to fly over the villages and towns of Afghanistan in the Red Cross plane and to look down and see that not a soul is in many of these villages. They've really been hard hit by 22 years of war and 4 years of drought and famine, as most people know. And I think the situation there is spotty. I mean, there has been delivery of grain into the cities, but getting it out into the countryside, even to get that one village to get grain from what is a journey by donkey 4.5 hours away, is a pretty daunting task.
What effects have the, you referred to the earlier period of war and the more subsequent period of drought and so on, what have the effects of the U.S.-led bombing campaign had on the distribution of food and other humanitarian aid?
Well, if you listen to the popular media and you listen to the War Department, Mr. Rumsfeld in Washington, you would say that things are infinitely better in Afghanistan than before. The women have taken off their burqas and everybody is listening to music. The only thing is, it's just not true. Things are not infinitely better off in Afghanistan. Certainly there has been the replacement of a repressive regime by a pro-Western one, which is really good news. We hope it will work out well. But in Kabul, that regime has to be protected by 4,000 or 5,000 international troops. The other parts of the country are still governed by the warlords, Rashid Dostum, probably the bloodiest one in Mazar-i-Sharif. He's an Uzbek. Gul Aga in Kandahar, Ismail Khan in Herat, and Haji Abdul Qadir in Jalalabad. And so I guess the biggest warlord of all is Tommy Franks, the American general, and Hamid Karzai in Kabul. Now, we'll see how all that works out, but I don't think it's really that good a deal for the people. And then, of course, the bombing has created, up to December 10th, and I haven't had the figure since then, 3,700 civilian casualties, which actually Secretary Rumsfeld absolutely denied the other day, which means that we're back to the Vietnam War era credibility gap in Washington, because it's well established by international news agencies. And how I just don't understand how the mainstream media can let the Pentagon get away with this.
Has the bombing destruction of infrastructure been really extensive? I mean, people spoke of there being very minimal infrastructure after such a long period of war, 20 years of war earlier, but surely the recent bombing must have made even more difficult the transport and distribution of needed food, medical, and shelter supplies.
Well, airports and roads are closed, and a lot of things are more difficult now because of that. And of course, when I landed at Bagram Air Base, it looked like Berlin after the Nazis. So it's really difficult to destroy it more than before. But I'm still troubled by the fact that the Secretary Rumsfeld said that before the war started, there are not a lot of high-quality targets in Afghanistan, and yet this bombing campaign has been going on for 3 months. Now, I saw some children carried bodily into the hospital by their parents screaming because they had picked up, according to the parents' reports, a cluster bomb that had fallen from the sky. It looks like the food packages, and the one boy had his leg blown off, the girl was blinded, and the other boy had internal injuries. It's a very traumatic scene, which I think is most people in our country have been cheering all this bombing, but the collateral damage, when you look at it closely, is a really very murderous assault on civilians.
There have been reports as well of food supplies being confiscated by the various members of these warlord groupings that you mentioned, excluding Tommy Franks. I guess he gets good meals without having to do that.
Yeah, and this is why those food packets that they drop in the air are selling for 2 cents a piece in the marketplace in Kabul, and wheat has dropped so low because they actually steal it and then sell it. And of course, in order to sell it fast and get cash out of it, they have to lower the price artificially. So it's a very spotty situation in Afghanistan. I mean, this next trip that I leave on Wednesday, we're going to do some surgery in the children's hospital there in Kabul, and pediatric surgery, and then go on to Herat, where we'll work with the biggest refugee camp in the world, is at Maslak camp. And so when you look at these, and also the women have not taken their burqas off. That's a myth. They still wear them, and that's their custom, and that's going to go for a long time to come. And that was true in the Northern Alliance areas as well as the Taliban areas. So there are a lot of misperceptions and misunderstanding, misinformation about this war.
The bombing, I mentioned the question of distribution of food, but obviously this is an agricultural society where a lot of the basic food needs need to be generated and grown within the country. How has the bombing affected people's ability and capacity to produce the food that they need, the grains that they need?
You see, that's why we're worried about the winter and the spring. I mean, you really won't know the extent of this humanitarian catastrophe until the spring, because in October they should have been planting the winter wheat, but it's not very easy to plant when you have a bombing campaign going on. So a lot of that was not done. Then 50% of the irrigation capability has been destroyed over the last 22 years. So they can't get water to the plants, and then they make more money by cultivating opium poppies, and that can plant that on the sides of the hills or most anywhere, and it'll grow. So it's really a mess, and the predictions that 7.5 million people were at risk of starvation were not made up or inflated. I mean, when you look at the refugee population, it's 4 million, and they are at risk every day. And how would you like to live on bread and water for these months? They don't get vegetables, they don't get fruit, and they don't get anything that would meat, certainly. And it reminds me of Iraq, where I've spent a lot of time looking at the conditions of malnutrition among children there. And actually, they've been on, since the Gulf War, they have been on bread and water, essentially, most of the people in the country, for most of that time. And that's, you can't sustain that over a long period of time. So we're worried about the people at risk. And I think that hundreds of thousands will die this winter, if not the millions that have been predicted. I think that the fact that the World Food Program has done a magnificent job, and the U.S. has provided about 50% of that money, is a good sign. And some people will be saved by this, but really the total amount that the UN is spending on this is $274 million. That's not nearly, you know, that's not much when you compare it to the cost of the bombs that are being dropped.
It's interesting you make that comparison, because in a an item we broadcast just before I've been speaking with you, there was a clip from an old Martin Luther King speech in which he said the Americans are spending $500,000 for every Vietnamese they kill, and they're spending $53 on the poor in America. So I guess the same disproportion would go into the amount the Americans are spending to kill Afghan people compared with the amount of money they're devoting to the World Food Program of the United Nations to feed the starving Afghans.
Exactly, and I think that's a good comparison. So we don't call people like Martin Luther King social prophets for nothing. They really have a great deal of insight into where we are and where we're going, and we need to broaden that sense, I think, so that people will realize what the real situation is. I mean, Secretary Rumsfeld keeps saying we have a job to do, and if you ask what that job is, I think the New York Times article last week on January 9th was very significant. That U.S. is building up its military bases in the Afghan region, which means Uzbekistan and Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan particularly, as well as Afghanistan and Pakistan. I think the U.S. intends to stay there for a long time, and certainly Somalia and the Horn of Africa would be next, and not because of any humanitarian reasons or even necessarily great fear of Al-Qaeda network, which is limited in size after all. But maybe as a good reason for now going in and what they would say finishing the job in Somalia or and also in Iraq to guarantee basis there for the years to come.
I wanted to get your comment on the U.S. media. How does their coverage of the humanitarian crisis match up to the reality?
Well, I met a lot of reporters there in Kabul, and my daughter is a journalist at Associated Press in Rome, and these people work hard, and I have a lot of respect for them, but there's something very perverse about the system, which gets a conventional view going in which it says certain things, and then nobody really deviates from that. So it's like groupthink, and that is like lemmings rushing to jump over a cliff. I mean, that's very dangerous if you have a sheep-like mentality in a democracy. I've been on CNN and on Fox where I debated, but Oliver North, but the thing is that they really don't give the time to an alternative point of view, and I think it's shameful in a democracy. It's also dangerous. It's very alarming.
Lastly, what suggestions you have for us, people who are listening to this program, to bring pressure to address the real needs of the Afghan people?
Well, it's not just the Afghan people. I think that not too many people might go out on the streets to protest or raise their voices if it's just the Afghan people concerned, although we ought to be concerned about them. I think we ought to take a look at our own situation in our own Western countries and to realize that we are facing a very critical a period of history, and unless we make our voices heard, then it's our job, it's our new house, it's our new car, that's our future that is on the line. Also, our privacy and our democratic rights. I mean, in the United States, we have an attorney general who doesn't mind to violate the First Amendment and defends it and says that those who criticize him are not patriots, and we have a Secretary of Defense who says, well, we don't really intend to abide by the Geneva Conventions. And these things are alarming because it's fine when it's your enemy, but what if it's you or your neighbor the next time? Those things, I think, are very real.
Well, thank you very much, and the best of luck to you on your trip to Afghanistan.
Thank you, Mort.
Bye-bye, Jim. I've been speaking with James Jennings. He's with Conscience International. And as I mentioned, he's leaving next week for his organization's third trip to Afghanistan since last May.
You've been listening to a program produced by Red Eye, an alternative media collective which broadcasts every Saturday morning from 9 until noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, in Vancouver, Canada.